My name's Will DeFreeze, and this is the Sunday Scaries Podcast, your cure for the Sunday blues. This week, we're doing some listener questions, so let's just hop right into them. Our first, what are some inexpensive ways to elevate your apartment? This is always a very popular question, probably one that I've honestly answered during some listener questions before. And this always seems to come from postgrads or people moving to new cities or just kind of people just trying to spruce up their apartments, I guess. And while I'm not really certified to comment on interiors in general, I'd like to think that I at least have a little decorating knowledge and experience from my old job and just from kind of having a passion for it. And what I came up with are these three examples. The first would be some plants. While they can be hard to keep alive, it's definitely worth it, and it's an easy way to up the aesthetic of your apartment without dropping, you know, a ton of money on something. Having plants alive shows that everyone that you're at least somewhat responsible, which is a good thing, but it also just makes your apartment or condo or house just look like it's a little more elevated. It kind of just brings some life into it when otherwise you might just have some furniture, some random stuff sitting around. But a plant just makes it all look a little fresher, a little more upgraded, and a little more high-end. It's a very easy thing to do. And really, if you have something in your living room, you just need to have one big plant and maybe a few smaller accent plants that should be enough. Whether it be flowers, a fiddle-leaf fig, something like that. Anything that just adds a little bit of life to your apartment, I swear, it will help and you won't have to spend too much money on it as long as you keep them alive and don't have to keep rebuying them. The next would be some framed photos, or mainly just don't have any posters on your wall. Framing can obviously be pretty expensive if you've ever gone to a place like Hobby Lobby to go frame something. They always give you the bill, and it's always astounding that something that's like 8x12 could cost that much. But there are ways around paying for super expensive frames at stores. The first is just to frame your own stuff. You can buy frames and do it yourself. You might not be able to mat it properly or make it look super professional, but it'll still be good looking, and it's better than having some poster or something else on your wall. You can also go to vintage stores for older or less expensive pieces. There's a lot of vintage and antique stores that always have old frames, framed photos, prints, or paintings, and you can just buy one of those. I've seen them for as cheap as $5, where you can just put it directly on your wall and immediately make something look more upgraded. Don't go to West Elm or Crate and Barrel, because at the end of the day, you're going to end up paying a lot more than what their prints or framed prints are worth. So many independent artists also sell their work online for reasonable prices, and so it just makes sense just to go try to find something that you like, get a print made of it, or just you can even go online and get things framed for cheaper at like Framebridge or something like that. There's a lot of competitors out there. I don't know if Framebridge is the perfect idea, but you can get things framed pretty much anywhere, especially if you do it yourself, and so just go out there and do that. And the final thing is throw pillows. There's always a running joke about having 1,000 throw pillows on your bed or couch, but it's a joke for a reason, and that's because it does make your place look better. Pillows elevate any piece of furniture if they're well chosen, and I've had the same throw pillows for almost 4 years now, and they're holding up pretty well. I'm not really concerned about them, and if anything, I wish I could remember where we actually bought these from, because I'd like to get a few more for different rooms in our house, or just to replace some old ones. Just don't have a futon as your main place to sit in your apartment, and I promise you'll be just fine. Our next question, what are your general thoughts on 9-to-5 culture? I'll be honest, working a 9-to-5 schedule used to be my dream all through my 20s. I wanted to work a Monday through Friday, 9-to-5, and I wanted to tell my coworkers to get away from me if they tried to contact me outside of those hours. And when I finally did work a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday job when I moved to Texas, I realized it didn't really benefit my happiness any more than my old schedule did. Growing up, we're obviously all told and taught the normal path that we're supposed to go on. College, internships, graduate, miserable job, better job, and then that rat race just keeps going until retirement. My path, it was always a little bit different. I worked within a small family-owned retail business until I was 27, doing everything from online to customer service to fulfillment. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't a 9-to-5. I worked holidays, I worked overtime, and I think the only time I had both Saturday and Sunday off was when I would actually take vacation. And these days, my schedule is much, much different than that. I work a full schedule Monday through Thursday with a shorter day on Friday. And given the nature and timeliness of this podcast, I find myself working a lot on Sundays, which I actually really do enjoy. The distraction for me on Sunday is a gift given how much anxiety I used to get on Sundays. And based on the fact that, you know, this is my thing, it's my brand, it's my podcast, I do really enjoy the work that I do on Sundays, even though, you know, most people don't like working on the weekends. I will say that my Sunday workload sometimes does cause me to take Monday afternoons off, but I don't really feel too bad about that. Overall, routine and schedule play such a large part in our mental health that I really hesitate to make a blanket statement about it. The grass is always greener mentality always made me yearn for something I didn't actually want. And as someone who hates being told what to do, it took me about 32 years to realize that's how I am. I'd be lying if I said that I thought of working a regular 9-to-5 didn't motivate me to keep doing what I'm doing today. I know this all can't go away immediately, but I love the freedom of working for myself. And the idea of going back to a 9-to-5 job, it just sounds like something I just don't want to do. It might be for some people, but what I've learned is that it's just not for me, and I don't think I'll ever put myself in a position where I have to do that, or at least I hope I never find myself in a position where I have to do that. But if I ever do go back, well, I'll just cross that bridge when I come to it. Our next, rank traditional Thanksgiving dishes. I'll start this by saying that traditional Thanksgiving dishes is kind of a vague statement. I know a lot of different families have a lot of different staples, and so I tried to narrow it down to, I think, 6 different choices, and I'll go through those now in order, going from last to first. In last place for me is the turkey. The best turkey is still lowest on the ranking solely because the rest of the sides are simply that good. I know that the turkey is the main thing, and I know that, you know, a lot of people have the take that the turkey is the worst part, but it's true. It's not the most exciting part of the meal. We also have cranberry sauce. I don't care if it's out of the can or if it's freshly made, but cranberry sauce is great and needs to be mixed in with everything else at some point or another. It is so good. My dad always makes the fresh one, and then we always manage to have the canned one where you can see the outline of the lines from the can. There's just something about having both that I just really enjoy. From there, we have the rolls. Some may say that they're unnecessary carbs, especially if there's dressing involved, and others may just try to eat 19 of them in one sitting, but sopping up all of the gravy afterward with one, it's just so good. Chef's kiss. And then we also have something that I did not grow up with, green bean casserole. It was never tradition in my family to have, so I almost left it off the list, but it's been such a phenomenal side that it definitely deserves a nod. My wife introduced me to it as a Thanksgiving side, and I don't think I want to do Thanksgiving without it anymore. Even better leftover. It's just so good. Next, we have mashed potatoes and gravy. Some sides, like green bean casserole and cranberries, they do feel inherently like Thanksgiving. Mashed potatoes, however, are definitely served year-round, and it's not that out of left field. But the beauty of mashed potatoes is that it's purely a vehicle for gravy. The more gravy you put on, the more of an excuse you have to drag all your other food through it. It's perfect. We also have pumpkin pie as our second place. You can take a bite of pumpkin pie, and I would defy anybody to take a bite of pumpkin pie without immediately thinking of Thanksgiving. I save room for it during the meal, I eat it leftover, and I normally go back for seconds. I know every single morning after every Thanksgiving, the first thing I do when I wake up is go to the refrigerator and eat some leftover pumpkin pie with some leftover whipped cream from the night before. The more whipped cream, the better. And then the number one thing from Thanksgiving has to be stuffing. Not just the best side, but the best part of the dinner in general. I don't care if you call it stuffing or dressing, and yes, I do know that there is a difference, I just don't really care. I call it stuffing no matter if it's in the bird or made outside of it. You really only get to eat it once a year, which makes it so desirable to me. And when you use it as a layer in the leftover sandwich the next day, well, I don't think I even need to explain how good that is. This week's episode is sponsored by Nomad. I recently got a new iPhone 13, and one of the most exciting things you get to do when you get a new iPhone is go shopping for new accessories. And when I found out that Nomad was a sponsor, I could not have been happier. They make chargers, durable and rugged cables, leather accessories. They make things for your nightstand. They even have Apple Watch straps, and they make everything that you need to complement the technology in your life. Nomad uses leather from Horween Tannery in Chicago. Their leather accessories develop a rich patina with time, and it looks great and is completely unique to you. If you just got a new iPhone 13, Apple Watch, or thinking about getting one soon, you should really check out Nomad. They have some great looking cases and bands, and I even have one on my phone as I talk to you right now. They have an awesome rugged leather one that features Horween leather, the same tanner that makes leather for NFL and NBA stuff. And their cases have 10-foot drop protection, which after a night on the town, I think we could all use. They offer convenient wireless charging solutions for home, office, and bedroom with a suite of chargers for whatever mobile device you use, as well as Apple Watch and AirPods. And the crew at Nomad was tired of dealing with flimsy charging cables that seemed to fall apart every few months, so they set out to engineer one of the most rugged and badass cables around. Reinforced with a double-braided Kevlar outer sheath and a strong metal alloy connector housings, Nomad cables have been engineered for extreme durability and heavy everyday use. And guess what? Holiday season's approaching. Nomad is a great gift. Check out Nomad at nomadgoods.com/Gary's to see what living the Nomad life is all about. That's nomadgoods.com/Gary's. Our next question. What's your favorite comfort holiday movie? I really can't choose just one, which means I'm just going to take you through my three favorite. Much like I love fall movies, yes, I do love holiday movies as well. For each of the movies I'm about to name, I have a special memory or ritual that I can really tie back to each of them. The first one is Love Actually. I don't think I even watched Love Actually until years after it came out, probably because there was some nudity in it. My mom was trying to shield me from it. But my mom had the soundtrack in her car, so I was always very familiar with that. But each Christmas season, I would always try, I still do try to make a point to watch it with my mom. There are some storylines that probably should have been left behind, but you can't possibly watch the movie without walking away from it feeling warm and fuzzy, especially after that airport scene. My favorite storylines are Liam Neeson and his son, which I'll probably get even more drawn to now that I have a son of my own, and obviously Hugh Grant's love story with Natalie. It's just so cute. We also have Home Alone, which in my opinion is probably the single greatest Christmas movie ever created. Being around the same age as Kevin when it came out, I always strived to be as mischievous as him. I just loved it. I thought it was great. The only thing I wanted for Christmas after it came out was a Talkboy so I could mess with everyone that I knew. My parents got me the Talkboy pen, and I'm sure that was ample, but I just really wanted the real thing. I vividly remember sitting on my couch watching it, trying to take notes on how I could be as clever as Kevin. And while it may not rank as high on other people's lists, for me, I do think it's the ultimate, and I make sure to watch it at least once every single Christmas season. And then finally, we have The Family Stone. This was a movie that I didn't even know existed until I met my wife, and we watched it on a return flight, and I think both of us found ourselves crying in the middle of the flight. It's the story of a large and dysfunctional family, something I think we can all relate to on some level, those uncomfortable feelings that get conjured up when we go home for the holidays. It's sad, it's incredibly awkward at points, but it's funny at points too. But most of all, it's pretty human. And while I don't think a lot of the actions taken by the characters are noble, the picturesque Connecticut house paints the perfect picture of a holiday spent with family. And I think that's something we can all appreciate. Our next question. Do you have any go-to albums for hosting guests or relaxing with a glass of wine? I love this question. I don't know if anyone remembers this, but it was probably a year ago, might have been even 2 years ago, I did a segment about making playlists and how much I enjoy making them. It relaxes me. It's an ongoing project. It's just really fun. I think my parents really instilled this in me, but I love setting a good mood whenever we're relaxing around the house or entertaining some guests. I've always gravitated towards jazz from these scenarios, and you're probably about to see that. My cousin and godfather, Brian, got me into jazz in high school, and I really haven't looked back since. And throughout my life since then, I've become tied to a lot of the artists I listen to. The top album that I will say is, that I put on for this kind of mood is called Gets for Lovers. It's more of a relaxed night in without guests, but it does work with guests too. It just might be a little too sexy. Saxophonist Stan Getz plays like he's singing to you through his instrument. Gets for Lovers is an album that feels perfectly relaxing, perfectly comfortable, and perfectly composed. Of course, it is a compilation of his music, but it's still an album that gets replayed through our Sonos on a relaxed night in, and it pairs perfectly with a glass of wine or three. A song from the album, Little Girl Blue, was actually playing when I proposed to my wife, so that album, or just the song in general, will always be something that I hold close to my heart. The next is a playlist that I actually made myself. It's called the Ipanema Playlist. Longtime listeners of this podcast have probably already subscribed to or listened to it, or they at least have heard me talk about it. I know this isn't a standalone album, but it's a playlist that I've been compiling for years now. Weighing in at over 11 hours, I always know I can put it on and leave it without having to skip any songs. It's comprised mostly of classic jazz and bossa nova, and it's a playlist that spans from dinner parties to long drives to just diligently working. I think when I was working at my old job, it was the number one playlist that I listened to throughout every year that I worked there. And as I outlined this very episode, I actually had it playing through my desktop speakers. I love it. And if you want to try it yourself, I will put a link to this in the description of this episode. And if I forget to do that when I upload the episode, someone just send me a DM and remind me to do so. But the final artist that I have on this list is Poolside. It's not a jazz pick, and it's a band that I really didn't know a lot about until this year. Described as new disco and chill wave, neither of which of those genres I really know much about. Their albums are great for background music when you want something that's a little more energetic than jazz. I first discovered Poolside when a friend was playing them over a long weekend, and they've been a staple in my rotation ever since. I'll be the first to admit that jazz playlists can often make people settle in a little too much, so mixing in some easygoing electronic lounge music always seems to be a good next step. And their Spotify radio station? Well, that will open you up to a very enjoyable night as well. I highly recommend. Our next question, how do I deal with growing apart from college friends? This is an age-old question, and it's a question that I've probably answered before, but it's a question that I'm going to answer yet again. A lot of people segment their friends off into very large overlying groups. Childhood, high school, college, post-grad. Whether or not that's healthy is up to that person to decide. For me, those lines have become more and more blurred the older I get. I'm in a unique position because I still remain close with so many of my friends from my hometown. I talk to them daily, I'm in regular group chats with them, and we try to talk to each or see each other at least a few times a year. But as it goes with any friends, sometimes you just simply grow apart. It could be circumstances, geographic location, personal differences. So many things lead to the deterioration of a friendship. I've played a clip from Chef's Table numerous times on this podcast where Francis Melmond speaks on friendships. He notes that his friendships have specific purposes, and sometimes when those purposes are fulfilled, those friendships just die. Their needs have been met. He also notes that the mentality he has isn't meant to be brash or harsh, it's just simply truthful. When I think about growing apart from friends, a very few specific relationships come to mind. I can chalk some shortcomings up to distance allowing us to grow apart. For others, I've felt wronged by them enough that I simply don't want to go back to that well again. But overall, when I think of those deteriorating relationships, I ask myself if I care enough to remedy the situation or just simply leave it be. In most cases at my age, I've just let them be. The idea of maintaining a friendship solely to protect the emotions of the other person, it doesn't do either of you any good. It leads them into a false sense of having a support system, and it causes you to spend your emotional energy on something you clearly don't want to anymore when you could be allocating that to something else. If a friendship is worth maintaining, you'll naturally maintain it without thinking twice about it. And if it's not, it'll fall by the wayside. And that's totally okay. Today's episode is sponsored by Honey. You know Honey, the online shopping tool that automatically fills in the promo code box when you check out online? Yep, well, it just got even better. Now, on top of finding promo codes with Honey, you can earn cash back too. We're talking cash, moolah, green, cheddar, buckaroos. Here's how easy it is. Once you add Honey to your computer, just shop like normal on thousands, yes, I did say thousands, of your favorite sites. Then, if Honey is offering cash back on your purchase, it'll drop down and let you know. All you have to do is click activate and that's it. You don't even have to deal with getting a check in the mail or anything. You just have to go to your PayPal account where you can watch it pile up and cash out. Whether you want to save it or cash out or spend it immediately, it doesn't matter. If you've heard about Honey, but just haven't gotten around to adding it to your browser yet, this is the time. Don't leave actual money on the table. Honey has helped me save on so many different things, whether it's been the tux for my wedding, whether it's been a random sweatshirt that I've bought online, or a pair of shoes. Anything that I buy online, I always think about Honey before I actually do it. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/scaries and start earning cash back. That's joinhoney.com/scaries. Our next question. What are your top grocery store pre-mades? I think I must have talked about this recently, or maybe I just have made enough memes on the Sunday Scaries Instagram account to joke about getting pre-mades from the grocery store when you're too lazy to do anything. But there's really nothing I love more than hitting a grocery store for some pre-made items when I'm feeling too lazy to cook anything. And for the sake of transparency, I'll say this. I shop at Central Market in Austin, Texas. It's kind of like Whole Foods, but a little less granola feeling, and I think it's also a little cheaper too. It's owned by HEB, and it's their kind of Whole Foods-y place. There's several of them. If you're from the area, you know what I'm talking about, but if not, I figured I'd give you a bird's eye view. My top items are as follows, and I will say that it's rare that I leave the grocery store without buying one of these three things. The first is chicken salad. Chicken salad is something that I probably eat far too much of, but it's something that has always been in my rotation for lunchtime, whether it's some chicken salad on a bed of lettuce, whether it's a chicken salad sandwich, or if I'm just shoveling it in my mouth directly out of the container. It's a quick thing to eat that always tastes good. And whether there's so many different styles of it. Tarragon chicken salad, curry chicken salad. I could go on like Bubba from Forrest Gump right now about how many different chicken salads there are, but I think you guys probably know because chicken salad is so incredible. The next thing that I love, and this is probably the number one thing that we buy as a couple, are the teriyaki dumplings. They're just dumplings that come, they're covered with green onions, and they come with this kind of soy sauce that you dip it in, and they are so incredible. We always end up eating them as an appetizer before dinner, and by appetizer, I mean we just open up the container, set them on the counter, and eat them while we cook, but they're so good every single time. And the final thing is pasta salad. Again, it's kind of like chicken salad where there's just so many different things or ways to go about it. But pasta salad is always something that I like to have on hand. Whether I'm eating it as a mid-afternoon snack, using it as a side for a dinner, it's so versatile that I just find myself always just checking, you know what, let's see if there's any good pasta salads going on. But yeah, those are the three things I enjoy the most. Our next question, what's your home office setup looking like these days? As you may have known, I've put it on Instagram lately a couple times, I think. I'm trying to put together a home office. And what I found out is that I'm not very good at putting together a home office. Right now, it's in a front room of our house. There's a chest with a TV on top of it. I try not to turn on the TV and distract myself, but normally if I do want something on, I just put on soccer or golf just for some background noise. Or if there's a game that I actually want to watch, I just toss it on and try to work while watching it. On the other side of the room is our Peloton, which is actually getting less and less use since our son was born, and something I probably need to make a New Year's resolution about. But my actual office setup, it's pretty makeshift at this point. I didn't know what desk to get, and it was that paralysis by analysis thing. I had no clue what to get, and I just found myself never buying a desk. So finally, I got a desk from my brother-in-law that he wasn't using, and I've just put everything on top of it. Resting on top of that is my new iMac that I'm really addicted to being on. I absolutely love it. It's the newest one that came out, and it's made my work life so much easier. Underneath that is a stack of New York Times Sunday issues that need to be recycled with a sketch pad and notepad on top of them. The sketch pad and notepad are things that I just jot notes down on or doodle on, just kind of zone out with them. There's nothing too much to it, but there's something relaxing to me about a stack of newspapers, probably because my dad always had one next to his chair. Next to that is a Casper nightlight that I use as a normal desk light source. Everyone asks me whenever I post a photo of it what it is. It's a Casper nightlight. Just look it up. It's kind of an interesting thing. I don't use it for its intended purpose, but I definitely use it a lot just for a smaller light source in our place. Next to that is even more Sunday Scary scented candles, in addition to a bunch of scented candle samples. I do always burn one of the candles from the Sunday Scaries line in my office. It just feels right. It relaxes me. I chose the scents. I like them. And I always have one going. And I will say, I am completely embarrassed by one of the candles that I have burning right now. I was too lazy to trim the wick, and the container is so dingy, so gross. I'm just ashamed of myself. I should honestly delete this part so people don't think less of me. And then on top of that, I've got a couple books that I'll probably never read sitting on the desk too, but whatever. They're relaxing. It's a bit messy, and I've got a shit ton on my desk that's solely there to make me feel happy. But isn't that how every home office should be? I don't feel too bad about it. Our next question. Getting snobby with age. Is that a thing, or is it just me? While I think getting snobby is a harsh way to phrase this, I think it's a natural occurrence of any of us who feel like we're maturing. A few episodes ago, it even could have been last week, I did a segment about aging out of certain cocktails like vodka sodas and Crown and Cokes. Even writing that segment, I felt a bit uppity. I try not to shame anyone who does enjoy those drinks, but I simply don't put myself in situations where I'm going with a quantity over quality mentality of drinking these days. And if your favorite drink is a vodka soda, by all means, go have a vodka soda. I'm not going to judge you for that, but it's always been my party drink because I can drink a lot of them without feeling terrible. But as I've grown up, I've simply felt less and less like I want to do things that make me unhappy. It could be eating fast food, hanging out with friends who go out way harder than me at this point, or just watching football on the couch all Sunday. I just don't really do those things as much anymore. Simply put, it's to each their own. If something makes you happy, do that thing. If something makes you unhappy, don't do that thing. But the fact of the matter is, the older a lot of us get, the more likely we are to advance personally and professionally. And in my eyes, I don't think that's a bad thing. I have older friends who probably saw me going out 3 years ago, and they probably wondered why I was still going out pretty hard and doing that kind of thing into my 30s. But I enjoyed it when I was, 30 and 31. But now that I'm 34, married, have a child, things have changed, just socially in general, I've probably adopted a lot of practices that some may consider snobby. But if something you do makes someone else unhappy, you have to look at it in two different ways. Does it make them unhappy because it infringes on their happiness? Or does it make them unhappy because they wish you do something else? If the answer is the latter, well, that's their problem and not yours. You're always allowed to enjoy the finer things in life, which has always kind of been part of the ethos of this very podcast. And if some people consider it snobby, which some people definitely consider this podcast snobby in a way, that's their problem. They'll understand eventually, and your personal choices shouldn't make that many people that upset. This fall, as you get back into the swing of things, Bespoke Post is here with a new seasonal lineup of must-have Box of Awesome collections. Bespoke Post partners with small businesses and emerging brands to bring you the most unique goods every month. I've gotten so many Boxes of Awesome in the past that I still use everything to this day. Steak knives, an overnight bag, a desk accessories, so many different things, even a cocktail shaker that I bust out every single time I have people over. No matter what you're into, I promise that Box of Awesome has you covered. From autumn craft beers to cozy threads and camp gear essentials, Box of Awesome has collections for every part of your life. There are some Box of Awesome collections going on now that I absolutely love the idea of. One is Flame. It's a miniature indoor fireplace that looks like a scented candle. Shawl, which is a cozy Shetland wool cardigan, and Dough, which is cookies and cocktails for a cozy night in. I think those all fit pretty well into the Sunday Scaries mentality. To get started, take a quiz at boxofawesome.com and your answers will help them pick the right Box of Awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's free to sign up and you can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box costs only $45 but has over $70 worth of gear inside. Plus, with Box of Awesome, you're supporting small businesses. 90% of everything that comes in your box is from a small, up-and-coming brand. Get 20% off of your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter code SCARIES at checkout. That's boxofawesome.com, code SCARIES, for 20% off of your first box. Let's do this final round of questions, shall we? Our next... What are your favorite holiday cocktails? This is a tough question, mainly because I feel like I've talked a lot about this lately. Usually around the holidays, or at least the fall season, I really gravitate towards whiskey. And after my trip to Scotland a couple years ago, I started gravitating towards scotch as well. And so if I had to pick one whiskey cocktail for just a traditional, holiday cocktail, I think I have to go with an old fashioned. I know that it's not some out there thing, but there's just something about it that reminds me of just sitting next to a fire, cozying up and just enjoying the warmth of the whiskey or bourbon, just filling my chest with that warmth. It's just wonderful. Another thing I like to do, and I'm not a scotch snob, and I'm sure there will be some scotch snobs out there that will not be happy with me for this, but it's just scotch on the rocks. I started drinking scotch when we went to Scotland. I came back and I bought a very, very modest bottle of it that I've just been replacing in my bar ever since. And I have to say, I do enjoy it. I do like a little water in there, and that's just how I do it. I'm sorry to all the scotch snobs out there that say I need to drink it neat, but that's who I am. And then the final one is one that I talked about recently on an episode, and I actually did a full segment on it last winter. but that's hot toddies. Whether I'm sick or whether I'm just wanting something that's a little warmer, a hot toddy is the perfect compromise for a warm drink and a boozy cocktail. And a little fun story, when my wife was sick a couple Thanksgivings ago, she decided that some hot toddies might make her feel better. I made her one and she drank it in bed while watching a movie while I mingled with my family. And when I came down, she requested another one, and then she requested another one and another one. And soon enough, she was just, I think, pretty hammered off some hot toddies when she was sick, but she woke up the next day and I think she felt a lot better. I will always ride for a hot toddy no matter what. Our next question, what age did you finally feel grown up and what was it that convinced you? This is a difficult question. Mainly because I don't even know how grown up I feel now and I'm 34 years old. But I will say that there have been two life events that have really kind of set everything apart for me and made me take a step back and think, huh, yeah, I'm a grown up now. The first one was a few years back. I had always lived with my parents, lived with roommates, or just lived in a scenario that feels collegey. It's just not a good thing. But when I moved into my own apartment without roommates, or at least a roommate that wasn't my girlfriend at the time and now wife, that was when I kind of took a step back, looked around at my apartment and thought, huh, okay, I'm on my own now. And it felt good. It wasn't like some crazy nice apartment. It was just a very typical Austin, Texas apartment. But there was something about settling in and decorating it with everything that I wanted to decorate it and no one else. It just was nice. And when I finally had it all decorated and settled in, I really felt like I had finally moved onto a new chapter in my life and I enjoyed it. And then the second one, for obvious reasons, was having a child. I think it's pretty impossible to not feel grown up when you have a child because for the first time in life, something is directly relying on you at all hours of the day. And I think there's a video of me that somebody took in the hospital where I'm standing with my child, Fritz is his name, and I'm standing with him and I'm just kind of swaying back and forth with him. I'm looking at him for the first time really alone. And you can't look at your newborn without just thinking like, okay, my entire meaning in life has completely changed, and it's a cool feeling. I'm sure getting married, that probably made me feel like a grown-up, but that's kind of more of a celebratory thing than it is making you feel like you're turning a chapter, but I think the engagement really is the chapter that's being read at that point. But having a child was the number one thing that made me think, okay, I'm no longer a kid anymore. I need to move on. And those are the events. I don't really have anything better than that. And our final question this week, how do I start a podcast? This is a question I've actually gotten a lot, and I think it's just because, I really am not working for anyone but myself at this point trying to do this podcast. And so here's kind of my bird's eye view of it. First, find a topic or idea that you're passionate about. When I came up with the Sunday Scaries concept, I obviously already kind of had a brand in place for it, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do with it. I didn't want it to be some podcast where that was similar to the other one that I was doing at the time, Touching Base, that's now Circling Back, but I wanted to do something different. And when I came up with the idea of doing a shorter form podcast, I guess today's episode is not exactly short because it's weighing in at over 30 minutes. But in general, I always wanted these episodes to be 15 minutes or less, and it's somewhat evolved from there. But I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was obviously a topic and idea that I was passionate about. The second thing I did was to see if anybody else was doing something like this, and nobody was. And if anyone's doing something in the realm that you want to do, figure out how to differentiate yourself. That's all you can do. From there, you have to become technically sound. You have to learn what equipment you need in order to sound professional. I hate to break it to you, but if your podcast doesn't sound good, if you don't have good quality, no one's going to listen to it. They might listen once, they might listen twice, but they're going to get tired of it. The amount of good podcasts out there and the amount of well-produced podcasts out there is crazy now. And if you're not paying attention to the quality of it, then you're going to fall behind naturally. You have to teach yourself a sound editing program. I know it's not fun and I know it's not easy, but you have to do it. It was never something I wanted to do. I resisted doing it for a long time. But now that I've done it, it's really one of the easiest parts of the job. And then the final thing about becoming technically sound is you have to learn how to make graphics and stuff to promote your podcast. I'm sure there are things out there that help you, make graphics. I'm sure there's like editors online and things like that. As for me, I just taught myself Photoshop in high school and I've kept up with it ever since. So I'm quite adequate in Photoshop at this point. But it's really essential that you just have to learn those things, because without those things, you just won't be able to scale it at the rate that you want. You also have to understand that most podcasts will fail, and that's okay. But you, in reality, you have to think about why you're doing it and what failure for you actually is. Whether you're doing it for personal fulfillment, additional income, hoping to have full-time income from it, you really have to go in with the expectation that, you know, of what you want to do. For me, this is personally fulfilling. It is my income, and I enjoy that. For others, you know, you might need to go in with the concept or with the idea thinking that, you know, maybe this isn't some broad topic that millions of people are going to listen to. So maybe you just have to understand, you know, this has to be more personally fulfilling than anything else. It's kind of tough, and having those expectations lowered is always difficult, but that's fine. It's a congested space that I've been lucky enough to be early on, so it's been quite easy for me. But I know if you try to start a podcast these days, it's a lot more difficult if you don't already have that base. But just like starting anything else, you just have to throw yourself in and just have fun with it. Because once it stops being fun, it stops being worth doing. And for now, I'm still having a lot of fun doing it. If you liked what you heard today, make sure to subscribe, review, or tell a friend in need about this podcast. By subscribing, you guarantee that each and every episode gets delivered directly to your phone every Sunday morning. You can also follow along on Twitter at SundayScaries and Instagram, which is at Sunday.Scaries, or you can follow me on both Twitter and Instagram at WillDeFreeze. And remember, always trim the wicks on your scented candles. I'll see you next Sunday.